Entrapment and fear are two of the most intense feelings of living in a domestic violence situation. Home becomes a place of physical or emotional danger, and your relationship one of betrayal and confused loyalty. The person who is meant to love you unconditionally becomes your violator. Getting out can take years, it can take leaving and returning repeatedly. It's a psychological haul, and it's this particular transition we want to focus on this morning ahead of White Ribbon Day this Sunday. And joining me now is Tracy Howe. She's CEO of the New South Wales Women's Refuge Movement, and also joining us is Jennifer, who left her abusive partner only just last year. Thank you to you both.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Tracy, we really have to remember that domestic violence is not only physical, and this is what can make it seem invisible in our neighbourhoods and streets, can't it?
Yeah, for us in our organisation, it's very evident that it is a thread that runs through everywhere. It really is a power and control situation. And in fact, physical violence in domestic violence services is just a little piece of a jigsaw. And we will find that it takes all sorts of form. And mostly, women know in their gut something's not right. They've lost a sense of themselves and they have no power. They walk on eggshells. All of that is an indicator you're living in a violent and abusive relationship. And in fact, it's easier to identify that physical stuff because society knows that's wrong. It's that other stuff that really messes with the women's heads, the nuanced stuff as you start to lose a sense of yourself from someone you otherwise love.
What are the other pieces of the jigsaw then? Just give us some examples of what form that can take.
Sure, it could be that you're belittled, that you don't have access to money. You're frightened to sign even a form for your children at school. We've had women come into services who they're almost fearful of taking responsibility as a parent in the school context, not being allowed to see friends, being told you're fat, walking on eggshells in the home, trying to keep the children quiet. It's that sense of feeling that you're not entitled to be educated, to go and further your education, to have a connection to anyone outside of the home. Friends and family are cut off. The list is so long and varied, but it really all comes down to the fact you are losing power and someone else has power over you and you're not equal. You know, it's a human rights issue at the end of the day. You're not an equal person. You're not a human. You're a woman.
Yes, there's a very complex psychology that goes on in this dynamic. To what extent, Tracy, does the experience cut across all groups, all neighbourhoods, all income brackets?
Well, I think that is the most interesting thing because it is very easy if you talk to the man on the street, you know, the legal man on the street. I think there's a vision. It's a woman on Centrelink benefits with a few kids to a few different fathers. This is a picture. Look, it cuts across Aboriginal women, cold, lesbian women have domestic violence relationships where they take a power over patriarchal response in their relationship. Older women, it's a burgeoning area. Young women, weren't young women at school? Rich, poor, any suburb. I'm sure there's women here listening who may be in the best financial situation and their children are in beautiful schools and they're actually frightened to access their account or they feel a sense of dread when they hear their husband pull into the driveway. So it cuts across everywhere. There is no woman who is left untouched by this because I would bet there's someone you know who's experiencing this.
Indeed. Jennifer, you left your partner toward the end of last year. Before you made that decision, what was your situation?
It was like Tracy said, the power and control, the money, the belittling, all of that. It was never physical, but that's not what makes it scary. You know, it's exactly what she said, the feeling of dread when they come home. Are they going to be in a good mood? You know, have I done enough? Are they happy? And why should I just felt responsible? It wasn't me. I couldn't make him happy.
You had situations like a small allowance and
absolutely
the petrol being limited in terms of how far you could drive.
Yes, because then I wouldn't be able to go and see certain friends who he knew were maybe empowering me, because he felt, scared that if I did that, that I would leave. So it was basically, well, if you can't see those people, then you can't leave.
How demeaning did it get?
Well, literally being told you're not good enough. A good wife wouldn't do that. A good mother wouldn't do that. Horrible.
Did it get worse over time?
Absolutely, yes. When I became empowered and became more assertive, it really intensified. And so then it was like tighter budgets and constant phone calls if I wasn't home at a certain time, and just being told flat out, you can't go there.
And what about children?
Well, it was like Tracy said, I had to try and keep them happy. You know, if I felt like it was my... I mean, I think as a mother you feel it anyway, but then in a domestically violent relationship, you feel even more guilty, you know. Oh, yeah, it is my responsibility to keep them happy for him, not just for themselves, because they deserve to be happy and because that's something that's important to a mum anyway.
Jennifer, do you think other people noticed what was going on, or if they did, that they felt powerless to act or say anything?
Absolutely. I had a close friend who absolutely knew that there was something wrong, sent me some information, and I wasn't ready. I just... You know, oh, yes, I know it's like that, but I just felt too scared to make a move. And she absolutely felt powerless. She said, I just want to come there and rescue you and take you away, but I know that I can't.
You also talked about feeling like property. How so?
Just that I was his and I had to do what he said. And because of the money and not being able to go anywhere, I just had no autonomy. And it was absolutely just, you're mine and you have to do what I say.
Did he ever say that explicitly?
Absolutely. You're my wife. You should want to please me. I'm your husband.
And I gather that it really surprised even yourself that you were in this situation, because you considered yourself a strong person.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Which is in a sense that none of us are immune.
Yes, that's right. And then on some days I would feel strong and empowered, except then he would come home. And then I would think, oh, that's right, I can't have my opinion, I can't say what I think, I can't suggest that we do things differently, I can't, I'm actually not empowered, am I? I can't do anything, I just have to do whatever he says.
And what about this process of then leaving the situation? Was there a point of clarity that you got, or was it a process over time? How did that come about? And it wasn't sort of one process of walking out the door, was it?
No, but I didn't realise that I'd left and gone back until I left for good. I just had a chance talk with a social worker who pointed out, that's controlling and that's not okay. You don't have to put up with that. I used to just think, oh, that's just how he is. And so then I did leave for one night, and I felt a little bit empowered, but not enough to not go back. And then, of course, he manipulated me to, you know, oh, I'll change, things will be different, I'm sorry. And you want to believe that. And so then I did go back, but I think just every day when things weren't changing, you know, that things changed for about a week, and then, of course, it went back. And then every day I just thought, you know, I'm going to leave one day. One day I'm going to get out of here. And then the day that I left, I absolutely knew for good I was never going back, ever.
So there was a process of mental preparation.
Absolutely. I can do this. I am. And having to tell myself, I'm good enough. I deserve better than this. I'm going to be okay.
And did you take the children when you did go?
Absolutely.
Tracy, how it's very hard for people to decide to get out of a domestically violent situation like Jennifer's, especially when it's psychological, because your sense of self is entirely decimated. It's not a linear process. Is this common for women that you work with across the New South Wales Women's Refuge movement?
Oh, absolutely. It is. I mean, it's very interesting listening to Jennifer, because I've heard permutations of her circumstances 100 times. You can have women who keep going back and forward, you know, 8, 9 times, and really it's testament to their sense of hope and their spirit that they are seduced into giving this person a chance. I mean, for me, I often hear people say, why doesn't she just leave, instead of saying, well, why doesn't he stop? But aside from that, the fact that women are willing to go back and say, okay, I'm going to give him another chance, is very, very common. And every time a woman leaves, and Jennifer touched on it, it was brilliant, she said that she learned something then, didn't she? She had a sense of power, and it builds, it's like a bank. It banks up, you get more knowledge. So every time a woman comes into a service and she goes back to her partner, and it, you know, it goes pear-shaped again, for us that's never a loss. It's a really exciting experience for us because we know she got something from the time when she was away, and she built up her self-esteem, her knowledge base about advocacy and referrals in the service system, which, you know, is another thing, just to know what systems. I don't know Jennifer's circumstances, but I know lots of women don't even know where to go for support. They don't know the particular agencies and whatever. So it's not linear, and I suppose that was a long answer for a short question.
It's an important answer, because often when a woman goes back to a violent situation, psychologically or physically, the people around her can't believe it. And they can also, their support can drop in a way.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, as Jennifer alluded to as well, when she left the last time, and she, one of the episodes, and she goes back, then restrictions are brought in, because you're actually much more vulnerable, and it's a flashpoint when women leave. You know, that evidence shows this, that women are in a really dangerous set of situations for that moment when they just leave, because you're disempowering someone who's always held power. So if you think of it that way, it's actually, they're all very smart decisions that women living in domestic violence are making around perhaps going back and having hope, or not leaving because they're fearful of the ramifications of that. And, you know, that's not even to talk about the family law potentials. You know, you can't just pick up your kids and run in Australia. You can't do it.
No, you can't, and many fathers would be relieved to know
that.
Right.
Non-violent fathers.
Yes, Jennifer, let me come back to you. How did your partner react to you leaving initially? And I wonder also how you've managed to stay apart, given that you have children. I mean, have you had to hide? Have you had to put in place measures that keep you safe? Or has this been a process over time of it being very possible to separate?
Well, the police had to come and help me to be able to leave. I literally couldn't leave without them. And then they suggested an AVO, which I took up. And I love having that, because it literally means that he can't come near me. Unless it's a particular arrangement for the children. And then, yes, I was in crisis accommodation, and if I didn't go there, I would have been homeless. I wouldn't have had anywhere to go. And I remember there was one night during that first week where I didn't have anywhere to go. And I thought, you know, I would rather sleep in the car than go back. I don't know how long it's going to be for. I don't know where I'm going to go, but I don't want to go back. It's not safe, and I'm not doing it.
And what about your children now and their father?
Well, they see him twice a week, so, but it's hard, because obviously when you leave that person, you don't want to see them ever again. But you just psych yourself up every week to be strong. Sometimes he's in a good mood, sometimes he's in a bad mood, and you just do it because it's for your children, and they don't see him the way that you do. They love him and think that he's perfect and wonderful.
Yes, and that's where children have a different perspective on these things, don't they?
Absolutely.
Tracy, if women are listening to this interview and wondering what to do today, tomorrow, next week, and also men who, because it is White Ribbon Day, and this is a men's led movement against domestic violence against women, what can they do?
Talk to someone, even if it's a doctor. Phone your, every state has an equivalent of a domestic violence line. Talk to the police, talk to a friend, talk to someone, look for your options, go to Centrelink, ask to speak to a social worker, go on the internet if you can. If you have to go to the local library for privacy, do some research on there. The first step, and I don't know if Jennifer would attest to this, but the first step is letting the cat out of the bag. It's huge. It's a huge time of opportunity, and perhaps it's even a time of opportunity for the man who's committing these acts. You know, one would hope, but at least for the women and the children, as soon as you seek some help, there is help out there. If it's a violent matter, you go straight to the police, of course.
Thank you very much for both joining us on the program this morning ahead of White Ribbon Day on Sunday. Jennifer, and to Tracy Howe, CEO of the New South Wales Women's Refuge Movement.
Thank you.
Jennifer and Tracy, and a powerful story there from Jennifer, not an easy one to tell, very recent for her. And let me say that the National Sexual Assault, Family and Domestic Violence Counselling Line, it's open 24 hours, is 1800 RESPECT, that's 1800 737 732. 1800 737 732 or 1800 RESPECT. It's White Ribbon Day this Sunday, November the 25th, and we got an interesting tweet from Daryl, who writes, "This applies to males, especially children, too. It's not just a female thing," and that is true. Yes, men and children and women are all subject to domestic violence, but because it's White Ribbon Day, this is a male-led campaign focusing on women who are subject to domestic violence, and really getting men to talk about that with each other.